Good afternoon. This is Debbie Farrison, Manager of Practice Enhancement and Quality Reporting at ACOFT. Today we have Nicole Bixler, DO, MBA, FACOFT, and she will be speaking about an overview of alternative payment models. This is an introduction to APM so that members can begin to understand these models and if an APM is the right practice choice for them. So I'll turn this over to Dr. Bixler.
Thank you, Debbie. I appreciate the opportunity. First of all, as a background, just a brief intro about me. I am a graduate of Philadelphia College of Osteopathic Medicine, and as I was attending that school, I obtained my MBA degree from St. Joseph's University in Health Administration. I completed my osteopathic family medicine residency in the Frankfurt Health System in Philadelphia. And then I worked in what I would call a traditional family practice office for 3 years, doing fee-for-service medicine and all of the normal traditional things you do in an office without doing any work in a hospital or long-term care facility. 11 years ago, I transitioned to Florida, and in that time since, I've been practicing in a Medicare-managed care model throughout that time, which certainly qualifies as a alternative payment model system. Additionally, I serve on your ACOFT Board of Governors as the Secretary and Treasurer, and I've been a past president of the Florida Society ACOFT and the Florida Osteopathic Medical Association. And what I'm most proud of is that I get to practice with my husband, who's also a family physician, and that I am a mother to 3 fabulous girls. So to get started today about this discussion, before we get into the details of insurances and APMs, I like to always start off with a little bit about what is important to me as a primary care family physician. And that certainly is the ability to be able to use my entire skill set as an osteopathic family physician that I learned through all of the wonderful training that I received. I like to be an advocate for our profession through awareness, leadership, and education of future physicians, hence possibly doing this particular podcast, and maintaining a balance of work and home life. And certainly being able to provide for my family and serve as a wonderful role model for my 3 girls. So why I am where I am, I learned early on what I love most about being a family physician. I love the opportunity to have time to talk to my patients. As I stated, I like to use my entire skill set. I like to be able to practice in multiple settings. I have now become accustomed to seeing patients in the office, seeing patients in the hospital, and also seeing patients in the long-term care setting. I like to have time to be involved in our profession, and I certainly like to be able to use my business education, which certainly has helped be able to understand some of the milieu of insurance terminology, which is what we're going to get into next. So in order to be able to speak about alternative payment models, there has to be a brief understanding of what insurance terms are out there, and certainly what I like to call as the alphabet soup. So briefly, I'll review what an HMO, PPO, point of service, an HDHP, Medicare Advantage, ACO, direct primary care, or DPC, and certainly APMs and AAPMs, which are alternative payment models and advanced alternative payment models. It starts to really become to determine where does it begin and where does it end with all of these acronyms that we use. So in traditional insurance, we have health maintenance organizations, or HMOs. Those certainly are systems that deliver health services through a specified network. For the patient, it tends to be probably the least amount of freedom to choose their health care providers. They are set with typically a primary care physician, and then they certainly have to work within a network. The primary care doctor manages their care and certainly does the referrals to specialists and procedural studies. For the doctor end, they often are reimbursed as a per member per month payment, regardless of the amount of care provided for that panel of patients. And they also bill for their services rendered in a fee-for-service fashion. This is a traditional HMO. In a PPO, a preferred provider organization, there's more of freedom to the patient. They get more opportunity to choose their health care providers, more so than with an HMO. They generally have a higher out-of-pocket cost, higher premiums, higher copays, but they often do not need any referrals for any specialists or any approvals for most of the services that they receive. So it does give the patient some ability to manage their own healthcare services. On the doctor end, they collect copays and bill for their services, just like we spoke about in a fee-for-service model. A POS, or a point-of-service plan. This is a plan that blends the features of an HMO with a PPO. More freedom to choose your healthcare providers than you would in an HMO, but a primary care doctor still has to coordinate care and refer to specialists. The cost typically is somewhere between an HMO and a PPO for the patient, and again, the doctor just charges copays and bills for services, completely working in a fee-for-service model on the doctor end. The HBHP is a high-deductible health plan, which certainly became more popular during what was dubbed as Obamacare, and that was being able to give patients the opportunity to pay less for their insurance plans, but certainly at the cost of having a very high deductible. This would certainly benefit younger individuals who don't plan on having such high-cost hospitalizations or procedures and more just routine preventative stuff, since they will not need to have to worry about that high deductible that they would typically pay with such an expensive procedure or hospitalization. In this plan, there's not much different for the doctor. They still charge the patient just as they would, again, for in a fee-for-service plan. Direct primary care, or DPC. In this model, patients pay a combination of visit fees and or a fixed monthly fee, which grants them access to a set of medical services from a primary care physician. Often this is paired with either a high-deductible health plan, as the DPC alone typically will not cover any catastrophic health care such as surgery and hospitalization. A patient often has to use a health savings plan or a health reimbursement account as an associated tax benefit that they can generally be applied to their direct primary care and other medical expenses. This is a relatively newer model that certainly is becoming more popular as a way to be able to, again, provide health care to healthier populations, but be able to have more access to their physician and for the physician to have a little bit more autonomy in dictating exactly how those services are coordinated. Then we move on to more Medicare side. And in general, there's terms in Medicare that also can be slightly confusing. There's Medicare Part A, Medicare Part B, Part C, Part D. So in general, Medicare general Part A covers hospital care, skilled nursing facility care, hospice, home health services, and physician office visits. Part B covers clinical research, ambulance services, mental health services, durable medical equipment, and some limited outpatient prescription drugs, and certainly preventive services, something that is very near and dear to the family physician's heart, and that is things such as preventing illnesses, immunizations, screenings, and things of that nature. Part D is the drug coverage. This is something that not all patients have, as traditional Medicare does not have a Part D plan. Most people will have to purchase a Medicare prescription drug plan or Part D plan that is a supplement to their traditional Medicare. Unless, of course, they have a Medicare Advantage plan or some type of an HMO or PPO plan that offers Medicare prescription drug coverage in lieu of just their straight Medicare coverage. And with the rising cost of prescriptions, this may be one of the most beneficial aspects of a Medicare Advantage plan, and that is for the patient to have coverage for their medications. And that brings us to what is actually a Medicare Advantage plan. Well, it is a type of Medicare health plan that is often offered by a private company, such as a Humana, United, WellCare, other varieties, depending on the geographical location in the country, that contracts with Medicare to provide all of the Part A and Part B benefits. The Medicare Advantage plans often have services that are attached to those, such as the prescription drug coverage, often other services such as vision, dental, wellness programs. And these programs and services are all covered through the plan and aren't paid necessarily under the original Medicare. So the patient basically functions as having Medicare coverage, but often with some other extra added benefits. In turn, that Medicare Advantage plan often has to function like an HMO-type plan, where there is a primary care provider who coordinates a lot of the referrals and services for the patient. And this takes us into our alternative payment models, which is the main focus of this podcast, is to start to explore what some of those options are and what some of those benefits of alternative payment models may be. So in general, an alternative payment model is a payment approach that gives added incentive payments to provide high quality and cost efficient care. There are three requirements that are very general, but they are requirements that must be met in order to be considered an alternative payment model. You have to use an electronic health record. Your payments must be based on a set of quality measures comparable to MIPS. And the entity must bear financial risk for monetary losses in excess of a nominal amount or be an expanded medical home model. So in other words, there has to be a financial risk on the provider to be able to be a part of this alternative payment model, which therefore when there is financial risk, there usually means that there is some other incentives to meet other measures. And that is the basic premise of what this alternative payment model is. Now, there are different types of alternative payment models, and then we will also get into what advanced alternative payment models are. One type of alternative payment model could be considered the ACO, or Accountable Care Organization. And I would refer you to, there are also a couple of great podcasts already been recorded on ACO specifically. But ACOs are large healthcare organizations that provide coordinated care for an entire population group, typically within a defined global budget. The physicians who participate in those organizations are financially rewarded for hitting quality of care benchmarks and for achieving cost savings. The primary care physician often coordinates the patient care by managing a multidisciplinary team of clinicians. They allocate resources, they integrate medical specialists into treatment plans as appropriate, and they generally oversee how that patient's care is coordinated. And being able to coordinate that care is where the cost savings and utilization can come in. And as stated, that is what then certainly will allow the physicians within the organization to hit those quality care benchmarks and achieve cost savings, therefore providing them incentives to do so. In an interesting article from Medscape in 2016, which is actually still 2 years ago, but still very appropriate for this conversation, is that participation in payment models certainly is shifting. Earlier in 2002, 2013, there was probably only about 3 to 5% of physicians participating in accountable care organizations. When you fast forward to 2016, that was already up to 33% of physicians that are participating in accountable care organizations, certainly showing the shift of going from not just doing fee-for-service medicine and billing for all services without any accountability for utilization or potential cost savings, to shifting the paradigm where now we are going to be looking at more high-quality care and rewarding physicians for being able to provide that care and still being able to save on costs. So another aspect of a alternative payment model, and what another function of that or another type of that could be, is the concept of capitation. And capitation is certainly what I practice in every day in my model of medicine. And capitation refers to when the risk is transferred from the insurer to the physician for cost and utilization of services for a fixed prepayment. So that therefore creates the financial risk for the physician to the extent that the actual services provided may potentially exceed those covered by the payment. But then on the flip side, the physician retains any excess payment when the reverse is true and your payment exceeds your cost of care. So in a simpler terms, in a capitated model, certainly you would receive X amount of dollars based on your patient panel for a certain month, and then you would pay all of the bills that would be covered for all of the patients on your panel. And then what would be left over at the end of the month would either be an excess or a negative. If an excess, the physician would certainly maintain that. And if a negative, certainly would not. So this is, again, a model where the physician is bearing the financial risk and creating an alternative payment model setup. So sometimes the question is whether capitation is good or is it not. So certainly capitation was designed to improve efficiency to control costs and to still do very good preventative care, because the physician, hospital, or health system is ultimately responsible for the enrolled member's health regardless of the cost. Therefore, the focus is on keeping the member healthy through good primary care, thus relying less heavily on costly medical specialists and hopefully preventing even more costly emergency room visits and hospitalizations. This very much sounds like a very osteopathic family approach to medicine, taking good, well-rounded care of a patient and providing them the best chance of remaining healthy, and therefore, by default, decreasing the cost of their health care. So when you're dealing with a capitated model, there is the global or at-risk capitation, and there's generally two types of that. Type one is when an entire network of hospitals and physicians band together and they receive a single fixed monthly payment for their enrolled members, or that capitated payment. And then that group of physicians signs a single contract with a health plan, agreeing to cover the total cost of care for those members. And then they must determine amongst themselves the method of dividing up the capitation payment among those who are involved in that network. The second type is more what I practice in, and that is that as an individual physician group, we are contracted to a specific provider group, and we are provided the capitated payment, and therefore ultimately responsible for being able to provide the services that our patients need under that capitated payment and utilizing as best as possible. This model works really well in Medicare situations where patients have Medicare Advantage plans. I am practiced in Florida, and we have a ton of those plans here, and basically our terminology deals with a lot of Medicare risk adjustment. The Medicare risk adjustment basically is a calculation of being able to determine the payment that is received under that capitated model for your panel of patients. Although I could spend an entire hour talking about Medicare risk adjustment, in a brief way of stating it is that if you have a certain score, that score is then multiplied by your number of patients, which is then multiplied by your contracted rate, and then that certainly gives you an X amount of dollars for that month. And then in that month, all of the things that need to be paid for that patient are taken out of that payment, and then what is left over again at the end of the month would be certainly what would be the payment left over for the physician. This risk adjustment score is derived and is meant to adjust the plan payments so that your highest risk patients, typically your sickest patients with your diagnoses such as diabetes and cardiac disease and cancer, have higher scores. And therefore, the higher scores would certainly relate to higher payments so that you have the benefit of being able to bear the cost of what their health care will be. Certainly, patients who are healthy would have a lower score and therefore would not have as high of a payment for that patient, because therefore their cost should not be as much. So it all breaks down to their relative risk score, and that is how that payment is certainly derived for the patients who work in this type of a alternative payment model. And another interesting article that was put out in 2016 was a capitation and risk contracting survey from a management consultant group and the American Medical Group Association. And they basically were surveying people who work in these risk contract type plans. And they stated that more than half of the medical groups characterized their organization's financial performance in risk contracts above average or excellent, with only 10% citing that it was a poor financial performance. So therefore, if you relate that to people who just practice traditional fee-for-service medicine, it actually is a higher satisfaction with being able to work in these capitated models where you do have a lot more autonomy in being able to manage the patient and do what you know is right for the patient and provide good quality preventative care and then reap the benefit at the end of it. So there's a lot of terms out there as far as quality payments and alternative payment models and all of these things. So where did a lot of this really come to more the forefront? The model that I mentioned that I practice in has been around for some time. That's not necessarily a new thing, but there definitely is a lot of things that have come up in the past couple years. Most specifically, they have come to fruition since the Medicare Access and CHIP Reauthorization Act of 2015, which is often dubbed as MACRA. And this certainly eliminated the sustainable growth rate, or the SGR. Now, at this time, high-value, high-quality Medicare clinicians are rewarded with payment increases, while at the same time reducing payments to those clinicians who aren't meeting performance standards. And this quality payment program started in 2017. And there are the two different tracks for achieving this quality payment, and one is the MIPS system, which is the merit-based incentive payment system, which is not the focus of this, but the second would be advanced alternative payment models, or the AAPMs. And so what is an advanced alternative payment model? Well, it is one of the tracks within the quality payment program that allows you to earn a 5% incentive for achieving threshold levels of payments for your patients. If you achieve those thresholds, you are excluded from the MIPS reporting requirements and the payment adjustment. You would achieve your incentive by being a part of this advanced alternative payment model. So for 2018, many of the advanced alternative payment models applied to very specific clinical conditions or a care episode or a specific population of patients. One of the most popular is the Comprehensive Primary Care Plus program. There's also an end-stage renal disease program. There's comprehensive care for joint replacement. There are shared savings plans. There's a Medicare ACO, next generation ACO, oncology care model, and the list truly does go on. For anybody interested, you certainly can refer to the CMS website and search for the advanced alternative payment models that are in effect for 2018 and how you can join into those types of models if that is an interest for you. At the end of 2017, CMS put out a report that basically they thought that 359,000 clinicians were participating in alternative payment models already, and that more than 12.3 million Medicare and Medicaid beneficiaries have been served. There had been over 570 and climbing accountable care organizations across the many models that I mentioned, the next generation, the shared savings program models. And there were certainly well over 130 to 140 ACOs that were in a risk-bearing track. And well over 3,000 and climbing primary care practices participating in the CPC Plus. So certainly this is the way that particularly primary care is shifting, is to be involved in these alternative payment models, advanced alternative payment models, and certainly finding niches and ways that you can work for your practice to make that happen through some of the many different varieties of models that are there. It is certainly projected that by the end of 2018 that there will be over 65% of physicians in some form of an alternative payment model. Again, that also does not necessarily have to be the ones that I've described, but also could be part of that MIPS reporting as well. So again, I briefly mentioned some of my practice model and what I do, and I just want to reiterate that a big part of these payment models is really recognizing that in primary care especially, that preventive care is ultimately very important, benchmarks are important, quality reporting is important, and that doing what is really right for the patient is ultimately, at the end of the day, what makes all of these models work. There's no real other magic to it. It's some bookkeeping, it's some record keeping, it's some EMR database extraction. But at the end of the day, it's doing what we've always all done for our patients, and that's take very good care of them and prevent disease and promote wellness. And I feel very fortunate that I've been able to work in such a model because it has been extremely rewarding, not only to be able to spend more time with my patients and be able to see the efforts that we put in to provide that great care, but also has been financially rewarding for us as well. And so I really encourage all of you who may be listening to this podcast to certainly not be afraid of some of this new terminology, to not be afraid of looking into these different types of alternative payment models or just alternative payment models, asking questions, going in, talking to people who already work in these, becoming more familiar with the terminology, because it certainly seems to be that this is where our entire focus for our payment is and will probably stay. And certainly is a benefit to not only our patients, but to physicians as well.
Okay, well, thank you, Dr. Thanks. Bixler. That was an excellent overview of APMs and the different terminology that goes along with them. And so this concludes our podcast for today. Please make sure that you look at some of the other titles that we have, and we're always adding new podcasts. So thank you and good afternoon.